pray about it, trust the system, get as much information as you can. Stop just being a naysayer. Go research and then make up your mind.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Life, a podcast brought to you by LifeBank. Donation can be a complicated subject, but it is really all about life. Spend a few minutes as we unravel the complexities of donation. Let's talk about life.
Mr. Rodney Stepp is a recent kidney transplant recipient and developed kidney failure due to COVID. Thankfully, he pulled through and is here to talk about his experience. Hi, you're listening to episode 155 of Let's Talk About Life. I'm your host, Colleen Gerber, kidney recipient and LifeBank staff member. Rodney, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here with us today and spending time sharing your story. As I mentioned, you were one of the hundreds of thousands of unfortunate people who had a very severe case of COVID. But there is more to it than just COVID. Can you share with our listeners what that experience was like?
I sure can. And thank you again for inviting me to be able to tell my story. Yeah, Colleen, it was a journey. I've just labeled it as a journey. The book that I'm working on, journey's got to be a part of this experience. It was devastating the way that I think I contracted it. And then finding out that there were three other people that got COVID at the place where I was. I pinpointed where I was and everything else. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it's just so unbelievable. And then like the miracle of it all. I mean, God just came through and the doctors knew nothing about COVID during my time. Nothing. And they've admitted it.
It's so serious. You were actually on a ventilator.
Yes. 14 days.
14 days
on the vent. And they really didn't think I was going to pull through. They had a prayer vigil for me on that Sunday night, a week after I had been in the hospital. I went in the hospital on a Monday. I was on the vent by Thursday. Two weeks later, they were calling people and saying, hey, whatever you do, you need to do it now. And a lot of friends, my band members, the lead singer of our group, they all were on text, from what I understand, at 10 o'clock that Sunday night. And at 6 o'clock that Monday evening, they had a prayer vigil at the hospital where over 400 people came out to the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's what we've got to hold on to. Easter Sunday, I started showing signs of life. Oh, and I got down, they say, to 10% of breathing on my own. And they said, you know, the vent really doesn't do anything after, if you're not doing at least 25%, the vent's not doing anything for you. So they were ready to pull the plug on the vent, and they didn't. And that Easter Sunday is when I started kind of coming back.
While all that was going on, as you mentioned, your body was healing and coming back. However, you had kidney damage that wasn't coming back. They weren't improving.
Not at all. And the way I found out about that, after I was out of ICU and they put me in a room, of course, I'm in a room by myself, of course, with COVID. Every patient with COVID was. We were all isolated and quarantined. But one particular morning, the dialysis nurse came in. And she was all bubbly, you know, because I had been asleep most of the time or pretty much out of it. And she came in and she was pushing this big machine and she greeted me. Hi, Mr. Stepp. I'm so-and-so. And I'm your dialysis nurse. And I'm like, what? Dialysis nurse? You know? And but you have to remember too, and when we get into this a little deeper, I couldn't talk then. I couldn't talk at all. And so I'm like not understanding about this dialysis. But then she hooked me up. I had these two tubes hanging out of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And she hooked me up and she said, you know, this will take 4 to 5 hours and blah, blah, and, you know, explained everything. And I remember having one little tear coming out of, I still remember that coming out of my eye, because I'm like, I'm not knowing who I am, where I am, what has happened, nothing. I'm still, you know, kind of in a fog. And that's when I found out that I had something going on with my kidneys. When I was finally able to talk to the nephrologist, she came in and explained I was in stage 4 renal failure and that I would have to be on dialysis and, you know, 3 times a week and blah, blah, and this and that. And I didn't want to really receive that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you're on dialysis 3 times a week. And your options, once you get to that point, are either, you know, dialysis forever or a kidney transplant, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, that is so true. I was blessed. I was on dialysis for 13 months. The first 5 months, I was doing clinical dialysis 3 days a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And then they talked me into trying peritoneal.
Mm.
And I like the idea of being able to be at home doing it and that I could be asleep while I was doing it. I liked that idea. What I didn't like was 9 hours every day, you know. But with me, what I did for a living with the music, playing gigs on weekends and playing at church on Sundays and then working at my job, the peritoneal worked out for me. But the problem was the 9 hours. So if I did a gig and didn't get home till midnight on a Friday, on a, you know, Friday night, Saturday morning, I'd have to get on the machine and then be on there for 9 hours and till 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And when I was working and had to be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'd have to hook up by 8 every night. And I'm a night person, and so I didn't have to go to sleep, but I still had to hook up because I had to be, that had to run its course and its routine. And that is no quality of life. I'm sorry. It's just, for me, that was no quality of life.
I agree 100%, Rodney. Dialysis definitely prolongs somebody's life. But the quality of life is questionable at best. I mean, they've come a long way. And people can certainly live many, many, many years with dialysis. But it is a difficult treatment. And I just want to make sure that our listeners understand that you are being cared for at the University of Indiana.
IU Health.
IU Health. And they are a fabulous, fabulous organization. However, they have a stricter policy for transplant, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately, you did not meet their criteria. So they told you they would be unable to transplant you. However, they did recommend trying the Cleveland Clinic.
Yes, and the story behind that was, and what was disappointing for me, I had been on the list for 3 years at IU and in Indiana. So I'm waiting patiently, and when it's about my time, because I knew we were getting close, my wife and I had the meeting with the head surgeon here, and he told me that he was afraid that he would hurt me more than help me, because he was afraid to do the surgery because my blood vessels had calcified. But he did say he'd be willing to write a recommendation for me. He wrote 2 recommendations, one to the Cleveland Clinic and one to the Northwestern University. And so I contacted them both. I hate to say it, but Northwestern wasn't user-friendly at all. They made me three appointments and canceled all three of them. Cleveland Clinic had my evaluation, called me, told me to come to Cleveland. The first day that I interviewed with Dr. Wee, he asked me, did I really want a kidney? And boom, that was that. 4 months later, I'm getting the call.
Yeah, that was April 28th of 2024. So not that long ago. I was blessed when you showed up at our door, and we're so happy that you did. Obviously, you know, the Cleveland Clinic has a little bit of a more, I will say, progressive program, and not just for kidneys, but for other organs as well. They take cases where other hospitals won't, you know, they just won't take them. So they're obviously a wonderful institution, and we're proud to have them here in Cleveland. But being from Indiana, you had to come up here, and not only were you seen at the Cleveland Clinic, you had to find a residency. You had to find somewhere for you and your wife to stay. And again, we're so fortunate to have a lovely hospitality house called Transplant House of Cleveland, and you stayed there. Do you want to share that experience?
What wonderful experience. The staff, I mean, everyone, I mean, they're like family to me now. When I call and, you know, talk to anybody, you know, I mean, Raven, you know, just anybody there, they feel like family. We were blessed, and I credit that to my wife. My wife was doing a lot of research, and she found Transplant House of Cleveland. Once we knew, when we got the letter in January that we had made the cut, you know, and they were going to add us, they were going to put us on the list, and that was in January of this year. She had found the Transplant House, so she called them in January, and she, of course, we don't know when we're coming, but she was able to register. And so she registered. When we got to Cleveland, I was in the hospital only 2 days. You know, they kick you right out. I had the surgery that Monday morning, and I was kicked out Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. So, but the first 4 days, 5 days, we had to stay at the Holiday Inn, Cleveland. But she had called them when we got in town and told them that how long we were going to be there. And they said, we might have an opening coming up on Sunday. And she said, well, we would take it. And we got the call on Saturday that they did have an opening that Sunday. And we moved in that Sunday. We lived there for 4 weeks. And in a one-bedroom apartment that really sleeps about six, you know, it was nice. It really was. That way she could cook my meals. We were comfortable. Everything was just beautiful. And I can't say enough about the Transplant House of Cleveland. It's my second home.
You know, it's so heartwarming to hear that you were able to come to Cleveland. You received a kidney transplant. It obviously is working well. You were only in the hospital a couple of days. The favorite thing of this story for me personally is that you were able to share your talents and your gifts with the folks at Transplant House. And I was hoping that you would share a little bit with our listeners. Can you talk about your musical background and kind of where you started and where you are today?
Sure. I started at 4.5 years old. I was blessed. Taking piano lessons, I was accepted by the Jordan College of Music, which is on Butler University's campus, at 4.5. My aunt is the one that kind of discovered me as far as... she said, something's wrong with that boy. And because my aunt had a piano at her house, we didn't have a piano at our house, but my aunt did. And I guess I was 2 years old, and they kept saying every time I came over there, I'd go straight to the piano and I'd climb up on the bench and I'd start messing with the piano. But then they really started paying attention, noticed that I was actually playing tunes. Mm. You know, it might have been just a melody, you know, with one hand or one finger or something, but it was actually a melody. And so my aunt told my mother to go get me tested. The Jordan College of Music usually didn't take kids until they were at least 7 at that point. They took me at 4 and a half.
Wow.
And I studied for 11 or 12 years there, as well as mm-hmm. playing in high school bands and orchestras, played clarinet, played sax, and I kept picking up instruments. Start playing guitar, bass, this and that. But keyboards has always been my first love. I started a band when I was 13 years old. We won a talent show at my school. And then that just did it. You know, the girls screaming and, you know, this and that. And that just encouraged me even that much more. I said, I want to do this. So by the time I was 15, I was playing with national entertainers. Back then, entertainers couldn't afford their own bands, and they would bring a musical director in with their charts. And we were these talented kids that could read fluently. And our manager would always hook these people up. I played behind the Spinners, Joe Tex, Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, the Emotions, all these people when I was 15 and 16 years old, when they would come into Indy or surrounding areas. The Spinners remembered us. And when they were able to get their own band in 1969, they took 3 of my band members away from me.
Oh, no.
And another guy from here. And I couldn't go because I was a senior in high school. So I couldn't, my mother wasn't going to let me go on the road. But they left. And that's how it kind of started with all of us in the Indianapolis area ending up going with different groups. I started another band in high school called the Diplomats. We recorded one record. We changed our name to Jazzy Cazzy and the 8 Sounds. We recorded one record. And then the next thing you know, after I did I was drafted and I did a 2-year military service. And after I got out, I wasn't home 2 weeks and the Spinners called. And that was I available. And I went out with the Spinners. They were with Atlantic Records then. They had their first number one record, I'll Be Around. And I went out with the Spinners and then became their musical director as well a few years later. And we just had ourselves a good time. I traveled the world. I wouldn't have seen the world the way I did if it hadn't been for my music.
I can't even imagine the adventures and fun and all the experiences you had while you were out on the road with the Spinners. I know for me, I grew up in the 70s. I was in high school in the late 70s, and the Spinners music was always, always great, and we loved it. So I'm very impressed with your resume and all that you've done in the music world. It's a big, big deal. But I do want to talk about something a little more serious, Rodney. August is Minority Donor Awareness Month.
Yes.
And you and I both know that traditionally, the Black community is a little bit weary about medicine in general, but specifically about organ and tissue donation. There's a mistrust for many good reasons. But yet, 60% of those on the waiting list are an ethnicity other than Caucasian. So what would you say to somebody who is a little skeptical about being an organ donor?
Well, you know, first of all, I would say, you know, especially no matter what your beliefs are, you've got to trust. And for me, it would just be trusting God. But you know, I know that, you know, different religions, everything else, different beliefs. But you've got to trust the system, too. It's about life. It's a matter of life and death. It's about prolonging, you know, your life somewhat. You might, like the doctor told me, I can't prolong your life, but I can give you a better quality of life with this new kidney. However long you're going to live, you're probably just going to live, but I can give you a better quality of life. I would tell people basically, you know, pray about it, trust the system, get as much information as you can. Stop just being a naysayer. Go research and then make up your mind. We did a lot of research. We read all kind of articles. We read reviews from people. We read different doctors' reports from the Mayo Clinic to Cleveland Clinic to hospitals in Chicago and Atlanta. And we did a lot of research. We had a better understanding going in what this was all going to entail. And I think that just open your mind, stop just automatic. It's the same thing that I've preached about COVID. I heard lots of friends, I'm not going to take the shot. I'm not going to do this. And I'm going like, listen to me, you look at me. I almost didn't make it. And I mean, to this day, if they come out with a COVID shot tomorrow, I'm going to be the first one in line. I'm not afraid of it. I'm afraid of COVID. That's what I'm afraid of. And especially now with my immune system being shattered. So I'm going to do everything I can. And that's what I would tell them, whether it's diet, exercise, or whether it's an organ, you know.
Yeah.
And but they need to really think about either being a donor, because they might need a heart or a kidney or a liver or something someday. And so everybody should think about that.
Well, I agree 100%. And thank you again.
And I thank you, Colleen. Definitely. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk About Life. If you have questions about today's podcast, reach out to us at info@lifebank.org. Take a few minutes to do something heroic and register to be an organ donor by saying yes at lifebank.org. Literally, someone's life is depending on it.